First thing on the agenda is the Main Street Beautification Joint Committee. Lynette, you're first on.
I'm sorry, Ken, I didn't hear you. Well, folks, I'm real excited to be here tonight. A lot has happened since we met on March 8th. And just to recap what beautification brought to you, we asked you at the end of the presentation to come up with a formalized plan to stub in power and water curbside during the street renovation project that will be happening in the beginning of June. And our vision for that stub-in project was to, or is, to bring what you see in front of you, trees and lampposts all along Main Street from 14th to Broadway to beautify our Main Street, to make it an appealing, beautiful entryway into Othello. And I think you can see with the brand new, beautiful wide street and what we're proposing here, it makes a huge difference. I think as a prototype for what we're talking about here, if anyone has driven by CBHA in the past week or two since the cherry trees have begun to bloom, it's a beautiful block down there. And that's what we're envisioning to bring what CBHA has started on up Main Street. We have a bit of an incongruity here in Othello, folks. And I want to talk about that for a few minutes. What Othello is really about, and all of us that are here know the reality of our city and what an incredibly remarkable place it is to live. But the reality of what Othello is and the reality of how Othello looks do not align. And that's one of the things we want to try to fix here. My sis made a comment to me that just hit me dead center. She said, "Lynette, when I've come to Othello, it's a hot, dry, strung out town. There's nothing that ties it together." She said, "I want to get in and get my gas and get my snack or whatever and get on down the road." She said, "There isn't a thing that draws me into Othello." And folks, she's right. And that's something we're hoping to change with this project. And as I stated a minute ago, we live in an incredible community here. And there are events that people don't know about. There are attractions within 20 miles here that people don't have a clue about. Because we have no reason or nothing that is bringing people into Othello so they can spend time and find out about what really goes on here. Just to give you a little idea here of just a few things that we brainstormed the other day with our beautification group. We have our parade, fair, and rodeo. We have the Sandhill Crane Festival that we just had that brought in hundreds of people from as far as Ireland, for heaven's sakes. Classic car event that, who knows about that? We have a wonderful 4th of July celebration and parade. Fiesta Amistad, that is for our Hispanic community and anyone that wants to attend. Who knows about that? We have a great farmers market, but mostly locals attend because people don't drive through Othello to find out about it. Memorial Day here in Othello is one, their memorial ceremony they have is just unlike any you've ever attended. It's amazing. Who knows about that? Our December Festival of Lights, our Relay for Life is amazing. We have soccer and baseball is ongoing in this community. We have our Faith in Action, where our churches get together and do amazing things for the community and the city of Othello. Who knows about that? Othello is the jumping off place, and that's my term, but a jumping off place for our refuge and our potholes area. And just that alone, there isn't another place on this planet, not another place on this planet, like our potholes area. It is unique in the world. Who knows that? We're going to have a centennial celebration here that's going to be amazing, and it has been publicized. But the point I'm trying to make here, folks, is there is a lot going on, and we're proud of our community, and we love what happens here, and that's why we're all here, for heaven's sakes, because we do want it to be the best place possible. But it doesn't look like what it is, and that's what we want to change. So to recap just what we were requesting is that the cost for stubbing in our power and water, that $60,000 that the guys are going to talk to you about, that be included in the $6 million price tag of that entire project. That isn't very much when you consider the scope and breadth of that huge renovation of Main and some of the other things around town that are going to be happening. That's what we're asking for here, so we can commence with the beautification project of our Main Street. And to continue with the nuts and bolts and the our number crunchers are here, and I would like to introduce Larry Julius and Taylor Denny, our engineers from Gary and Osborne engineering firm out of Yakima. And I'm sure you guys know these fellas much better than I do, but they've been invaluable in teaming with us. And before you come up, guys, I would just like to personally thank you folks that have been on our committee to take us to the next step. It has been one of the most amazing things I've been a part of in a very long time, to see the excitement and the enthusiasm and the energy that people have brought to the table with their expertise. Thank you, Ken Johnson and Gina and Ken Kaler and Eamon, for your wonderful direction. And our engineers have been absolutely awesome. Jay, for your wonderful input here. It's been a package that has come together, and we're excited to share it with you. So guys,
thank you. Council members, nice to see you all again. Quite an introduction. We've looked at a number of different scenarios as far as costing, all the way from what was just described as getting ready for the future, a bare bones approach, which is installing electrical conduits and water service piping throughout all of Main Street for future, for when the funds would be available for beautification. And we've looked from there all the way to if the city decided to do everything all at once. All of the beautification, all of the trees, all of the decorative lighting, including replacing all of the sidewalks. just a what-if scenario. So in the four different scenarios we've looked at, just the bare bones putting in electrical and water service for the future is approximately $58,000 to $60,000. If we were to do one block, just one block at a time, of the entire beautification, including lighting, trees, concrete sidewalk on that one block, we're probably talking about $100,000. Now this is a total estimated project cost, so it includes mobilization, which when we actually would get into construction would be part of the overall project anyway, a construction contingency of about 10%, since we've not really completed design, just to be on the safe side, some additional time involved to put the design together and have the inspector out here. We've also looked at if we were to do water and electrical for the future and completely replace all the sidewalk now, just as another alternative, and that's in about the $400,000 range. And if we were to do everything, like I said, all of the sidewalk now, all of the lighting now, all of the trees now, that would be about $980,000. So we're looking at a range of about $60,000 to about $980,000 for an initial start to the project compared to a complete, everything's done all at once. Timing-wise, if we were to add any of these to the existing project, we don't see any problem with continuing with the schedule we have now, which is to be out into construction probably more towards the end of June than the 1st of June, but still in June. Construction-wise, it wouldn't add that much time to the project. Yeah, the new sidewalk will, but if we're just putting in conduits, we don't see any problem with getting it done while we're still in this construction season. The type of plantings would be from the list the city has generated that would be conducive for in-sidewalk plantings. They'd be in concrete wells, so we wouldn't have to worry about the roots, and they'd be the type of trees that would be labor-friendly, if you will, for public works. The decorative lighting would be similar to what's down in front of CBHA at first. We have a rendering here that shows what a block could look like. Kind of difficult to see against the screen there, but the trees in bloom, the next block over, you can see with the decorative lights how they would look. We've also have a rollout map here if you'd like to look at it that shows where the plantings and the lights could be placed on a block-by-block basis. And that's our part of the presentation.
Larry, can you stay ask some questions? Explain to us, if we just put conduit and water in, what we have to do when we if we decide to go ahead with the project. And also, you're talking about replacing sidewalks. It sounds a little dramatic to me. Why don't you just drill a hole and bring the stuff up and put the light over it?
That would be the plan. The idea of a new sidewalk was born in one of the meetings in talking about beautification, just as something to compare against. Most of the sidewalks in decent shape, we wouldn't recommend replacing it. There's a couple of areas that, you know, with the construction we're going to be doing, when we come through and replace part of the water system, there's a few panels of sidewalk that'll have to go out. But other than that, most all of it's in good enough shape, we won't need to replace it.
So is that, if you put conduit and water in, is that, could you just bore a hole through the concrete, dig under the road and connect to that, or do you have to tear up the road too?
The road would be torn up in the areas where we'd be putting in water main anyway. So there's a little bit more work to be done, but when we want to cross the roads, it's in areas primarily where we're going to be torn up anyway.
No, I mean if we just lay the conduit and water there, the $60,000 project, and then you come in and hypothetically a year later want to put a street light in, do you have to tear up the road to do that?
No.
Okay.
conduits would be placed far enough back so they wouldn't have to tear up any asphalt at all. And the sidewalks are wide enough that we could look at individual locations, cutting out a quarter of a panel. So we're not talking about a full 10-foot wide width. We're talking about maybe a 2.5 to 3 foot square area where the light would go, or for that matter, the planter well. So at that time, there would be concrete torn up, but it'd be at a place where there's already a stub out for either water or electrical.
So you're talking about a planter well, and assuming that's like a big, just a big concrete box in there that the tree would be in, so the roots don't spread out.
Mm-hmm. With a grading, decorative grading over the top at the sidewalk level. So we don't have a toe stubber or something somebody would trip into. No falling down the wishing well.
Any other council comments or questions?
Well, I have comments. You heard it here. I mean, he's avoiding saying it. It's $980,000. It's a $1 million project, people. I was just in Newport last week, and they have this. They have street lights. The first 2 feet of sidewalk off the curb are brick. They have the lights, the trees. I looked down that and visualized Othello could look like that. It did nothing for me. I don't know if I was raked too many leaves as a kid or what, but I just like, it didn't add any value to me. I would like it. For that, what they spent on that, they should have spent it on skateboard parks and ball fields and soccer fields, and I can't do it.
Well, as part of the committee that was working when we were talking, I believe the intention is to put them possibly get the stub ends in, and then they are going to be looking at acquiring grants, and that's where the sidewalk project in conjunction with a beautification project they were talking about, you know, if grants would be available and that could tie in. But I don't believe the intention is for the city to do the entire beautification project on our own.
Councilmember Darnell's exactly right. The engineer and the city, we're all looking for grants to go beyond the stub out portion. But what we need to do is, remember, we have this timeline of approval of the councilmanic bond and the date of construction going out to bid, because as we discovered early on, we have to have the money secured before we go out to bid. That was one of the questions asked a few meetings ago. So we need to solidify what direction the council wants, what you want in the project, so we can get the councilmanic bond to you for approval or not, depending on you. Then we can get the bid specs out. So it's already gone from the 1st of January or June to the end of June. And we really need to get the bid out, if that's your desire, to get the best price. The bids are already escalating. We saw in January how low they were. And the sooner we go out to bid, the lower our bid estimate or bid contract price is going to be. So, but Gina's exactly right. The intent is to find supplemental monies to go beyond the stub out process.
Can I go?
Plus, I believe the monies that if we do the stub outs, the monies that we put into that can be counted as in kind for the grants. Is that correct?
Yes, it depends on when we write them and what they say, but that's an option.
That's an option.
Yeah, and remember, the other stimulus package is flowing. It's flowing slow, but it's gonna get here. And if we're not, as Lynette said, shovel-ready projects are gonna get funded. All others won't. So we have to be ready.
Ken?
Well, yeah, I'd like to make a couple of comments here. You know, we're in the process of doing this street out here, and I think this $60,000, I hope that's the right figure there, but anyway, I think it's cheap insurance. We've got other things involved here besides. If we update just our street lights, we're gonna have to do quite a bit of work out there anyway. We've got mix-match street lights, whatever, out there. Whether we change the whole concept or whether we just add to those, it's worth quite a bit to at least have this portion of the underground already in. And as Gina says, we'd have match money, which would help on this grant funding. We don't expect ourselves to, as a city, to pay for this total project. We can probably end up with some of the business owners involved in this as far as some of the costs, because it's gonna improve their business as well. And I hate to say it, but I hate to disagree with people, but we do need something on Main Street to make City of Othello look like a city. We just, it's blah, that's it. And if we can come out, whether this project gets done in a year or 5 years, at least we've started the process to make something happen. And the first thing to do is go out there and put those sleeves in, get the underground in. We're not going back and tearing up the streets and doing that portion of it. And that's what has to be done now.
If we can avoid tearing up a brand new street, you want to avoid that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Spend another $500,000 to go back and redo them.
You know, and I'm really agreeable that we at least get this first phase done, because that's the bare bones to start this whole project for the beautification. Lynette, you used the word imagine the last time you were here. And that's what sold me, because imagining this today, hopefully, is tomorrow's reality out of this project. And seeing this picture and seeing what it could look like, it really gives the town character. It will really set an example. And not what we could do, what the businesses and everybody else will hopefully come on board with this and do to their own businesses and spruce them up to really give this town some good character.
Say that $1 million figure. You and I both heard it. You know, they said 980,000. But 60,000 is a small drop. You only get one chance to do it right when you dig up something that big. You dang well better jump in while you can cheat.
Yeah, start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it seems like to me to put in $60,000 into a project this size, have your water and your power stubbed out so that when you do decide to do something else, whether we pay for it, whether they pay for it, whatever happens, you have to have something to do. If you don't have that, then you're not going anywhere. Mark mentioned, you know, soccer fields, baseball fields, those kind of things. Yeah, they're helpful, but if, you know, if it's ugly when you drive in town, why, you don't come again. That doesn't mean that this is going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years either. So I really think spending the $60,000 is money well spent in the long run for the city. I, you know, there's a lot of things I could see, you know, where do people stay when they come to this town? There's one motel and there's no trailer park, there's nothing here in town where people can stay. And you know, those things need to be addressed, but $60,000 is pretty cheap when it comes to that. So I, as far as I'm concerned, I think it ought to be done.
So we could have this as a add-on on the bid proposals for the Main Street project.
Yes. Okay. I assume you will come with that at the next council meeting, is that right?
Okay. Any more questions or comments for the beautification?
So you're requesting the studs and the seams be put in at the next council meeting, at that level?
Yes.
We'll do a scope of project approval.
Okay, next thing on the agenda, Port District request for reimbursement, SR 26 Reynolds Road crossing.
Good evening. As was tabled in the last council meeting, we discussed the port's request for reimbursement for $11,235 for change orders that were requested at the crossing. We're bringing this back tonight to discuss it. A couple of council members probably didn't completely understand the project and what had happened. The port was putting in an extension across SR 26, and SR 26 at the time was being reconstructed the intersection at 14th and 26. The state allowed the port to do an open cut through there to install the water line to their future development there. So that went really well. Once we were done, the port requested this reimbursement, stating that the city caused a change order in the plans and that we wanted this done because of future improvements in the city. This is not the case. And what the city required was minimum to make the connection for the port in that area. There was currently a T and two valves, and direction was not set to work towards the port's property. It was set to go east and east only. In order to go south, we requested or required a cross be put in so they could connect to the south. And that's where we're at. And I think Mike is here, and he wants to explain his end a little bit, and we can talk about this and get it straightened out tonight.
This is a matter of perspective, although I'm a little uncertain as to what direction we're going here in this session. But I think if you just look at it in terms of a $210,000 project connecting onto an existing water line, you know, maybe you could say that the water line should have been prepared, you know, to go in that direction, and that should be a city investment in growth, because after all, you know, we put in $210,000 to get across that highway, which opens up, you know, that whole area there. We haven't quibbled about anything else, you know, that we could have quibbled about. Like, you know, why aren't you paying for the upgrade from an 8-inch to a 12-inch line? Well, the argument is, we don't know what you're going to do. You're probably going to need that water. Well, I would argue that no, we're not going to need that much water. We also own 222 million gallons of water out of Bruce. If I had a big time water user, I wouldn't, you know, load that onto the city's requirement to feed that much water. I'd put them out of Bruce, you know, unless they absolutely had to be here. And when you look at the kinds of companies that have approached us to be in the business park, none of them are big water users. So there's that. You know, we didn't ask for any help on the upgrade or the decision to go to 12-inch. We just did it automatically. When we connected, we elected to connect with a more expensive, you know, better system. You know, don't ask me to explain what it was, but we didn't, you know, we had a couple options there. One, to just kind of do it the way it gets done many times, and there's a potential over time for a leak. And when the engineers brought that up and said, well, Mike, what do you want to do? And I said, I really want to do a good, high percentage, long-term solution so that we never have to come back to visit this. You know, I'm just, again, it's a matter of perspective, I think, on this. And maybe, you know, just showing some good faith and working with the board. You know, we've been very quick to just do the right thing. And, you know, we could be arguing a much tougher case and might want to do that in the future, you know, if we aren't going to work together a little bit better. But I can see that this is probably a matter of perspective more than anything else. I can see where there might be a precedent, you know, but I think that this is a fairly unique situation that you could argue that, you know, you were just helping to facilitate, you know, a major expansion into additional city property, the 65 acres we've got, the additional acres that were incorporated into the city that are substantial as a result of our getting the business park going there. And in a way, maybe you could just say that this contribution, if you will, is just in support of what the board is trying to do, which is provide serious, needed economic growth. Incidentally, there's a book called $20 a gallon gasoline that I just read. And it supports what you're doing with the Main Street utility stub-ins, in that they're saying that small towns are going to become very desirable and that are going to want to grow in a way that allows for short commuting, walking, you know, a different kind of community where you're just not going to be jumping in your automobile because of $20 a gallon. You're going to, you know, have a very expensive trip. Well, our business park is close in to the city. I think it's going to allow for a really nice, diversified business environment that makes perfect sense. I know we have people who are going to the bank to put together an apartment deal as we speak. And they're excited about the fact that the apartment deal on the church property is very close to where the business park is going to be, because they see that as a place where these apartment dwellers can live. So I think when we look at this request for $11,235, I think there's just many different ways you can look at it. And right now, I would rather not quibble so much about who know what, when, and all that sort of thing. You know, I just think that, you know, that area was not ready for expansion. You know, growth pays for growth, I don't think is the best philosophy to work under. It's a popular one that's been around for a long time. But I think the city might well profit from a perspective that says, you know, what can we do to foster growth, the right kind of growth, and where we want it? And helping out in little ways like this to be ready. For instance, this particular point that we joined into, what other points are there in the water system that are not up to snuff, that are going to discourage growth? If we weren't supported by taxpayer money, we wouldn't be doing this. Because we don't have people lined up to move into our business park. And granted, someday somebody may come by and want half of it. Well, that changes everything. Suddenly we can afford to pay for whatever we got to pay for. But if this thing develops slowly, like it very well could, you know, every dollar is king. I mean, the port needs $1.2 million just to get to a point where it can build its first building. You know, and I appreciate what the city's doing with the extension of the sewer into the Broadway area. I know what a big challenge that is for you, and it's critical to us developing our area. Well, we're not sharing in that cost, and I appreciate what you're doing, and you've offered to bring it up to our property line, and that's a very big help. I really appreciate that. But I think in a simplistic way of looking at things, you know, we took it on the chin with this project, and $11,235 would be a wonderful vote of confidence for what we're trying to do and a demonstration of your willingness to help us out. So I'd be happy to field whatever questions you have. Like I say, I'm not real sure where we're going with this. That's my 2 cents for now.
I might, Ben, you're still up there, Mike. I'm gonna make a little comment here. I don't know whether people appreciate it or not, but I think that the port stepped out front here and, like you say, took it on a chin a little bit for $200,000 to do a project. Yeah, sure, it's gonna help the port, but it's also gonna help the city of Othello. Like Mike said, they could have put an 8-inch line in there. We would have probably paid the difference between the 8 and the 12, which in perspective, if you go through the port property, come out on the other end of concrete or whatever, tie in, make our loop, which is what we should have in the first place down there in that area. Don't quote me, but I would say we're talking about $150,000. And if we can't help a little bit in this project, sure, maybe timing wasn't quite right. Maybe we didn't have our figures quite together. Maybe we didn't know what we had there either. But the idea is it's done, it's put in there, and I think it was in good faith that the port went ahead and did their part of it. And I think for $11,000, I think we got a heck of a project out of it. And I don't see why we can't help the port a little bit in that. To me, it's good faith, it's partners working together to make something happen. And that's my feeling. I think it's a small piece of change as far as the city's concerned. Sure, I know $11,000 is a lot of money. Anytime you change the budget, it's a lot of money. But you look down the road and look at the future and look what it could have cost us. And I think we benefit a lot from it in the future from the port and also tying our south project into this whole thing. So I think that that's the way the council ought to think and look at it too.
Well, I have a different perspective. We talk about the city needs to show support and the city needs to contribute to the port. The city is made up of citizens in the business in this area. The citizens in the business of this area pay the port. When you get your Adams County bill for the treasurer, they want taxes. Part of that money goes to the Port of Othello. To the tune of the city of Othello pays the Port of Othello, the city, the citizens, the business of Othello, $180,000 this year. We're paying them to do this kind of stuff. And to me, to come back and ask the city to show support or contribute is almost like double dipping. We give money to the support. It doesn't, you don't see it in the city budget, but it's coming out of citizens and business pockets. And if part of that is a return on investment to upgrade the water line so the port can tap into it, I think that is a show of good faith. I think that is sharing the money that they receive. And I don't think that we need to pay them double for money we've already paid them to engage in stuff like this. So I totally disagree that we need to pay to show we're contributing or show support, which we're already doing to the tune of $180,000. I don't think we need to put more in.
Is there any other comment from council or questions?
Submits plans to the city, we look at them. And we look at the opportunity for upsizing. We do that all the time. And if there is a legitimate request for upsizing, we suggest to the developer to make that request in writing to the city. This has not been a request for upsizing. This was minimum requirements for the port to make a connection. And that's where we're at right now. We did not ask for anything over and above for the city's benefit. We've had a recent developer that was required to put in approximately 700 and some odd feet of sewer. That developer paid for that and asked the city to develop a latecomer's fee. And that's the guidelines that we operate by. I respect Mike's perspective on this, but as far as design standards go, this is what was required for this developer being the port now, to do this project. There was no benefit over and above for the city for future. Just offer that perspective.
Now, at the last meeting, a latecomer's fee was possibly mentioned for this particular project. Is it feasible for them to do a latecomer's fee for other people that will attach to their line?
Usually a latecomer's fee is when a part of an infrastructure is put in that will benefit another development by another developer at a different time. That's not what's happening here. Usually when a developer is required by city standards to do a certain amount of work, that dollar amount is figured into property sales for the property that it's going to serve at a later time. This does not cross and benefit other properties at this point in time. It could in the future, but not at this time. This was minimum required to make the connections. The change order, as keeps being said, was a change order on the port and their developers or their contractors portion of this work. There was no change order. The bids given to the port were given on unapproved plans that we hadn't seen yet. It was only at the time of construction did we know what was there. There was no change order requested. In order to have a change order, you have to have an approved set of plans, and then the city asked for a change. That was not the case.
And I brought it up last time, it's perfectly legitimate for the port district to have a latecomer fee for the people that develop that land that water's feeding.
Correct.
Anyway, I'm proposing we be done with this issue. I propose that it not come up on the agenda on the next meeting. It just ended here, where it's just a return of investment of money the citizens have paid.
Well, for one thing, it's not just the citizens of Othello that pay that money to the port. It's people outside of the city limits, which is a substantial number because our boundary is the panhandle.
Well, are you asking them for money?
The city, those taxpayers make that separate contribution because they voted to do so, because they understand the value of an economic engine, none other like a port, which can also secure grant money, has full-time employees, and has a long-term development plan. So the mission of the port and the mission of the city are vastly different, and the taxpayers contribute to each for vastly different reasons. Additionally, I think it's safe to say that when the port connects onto a 12-inch city water line, that we should be able to connect directly into a 12-inch water line. That T that was there that became obsolete, for that matter, could have been removed. And we could have just cut that off and it tied right in. But then, and that would have worked for the port. Wouldn't have worked in the best interest of the city, but that's the city. You know, so, you know, there's just that way to look at it. And again, you know, the port is not made of money, doesn't have enough money to do what it needs to do. Like every port, we never have enough. We're just trying to make the most out of what we've got. And frankly, I just like to see a little friendly support from the city.
Well, if somebody gives me $180,000, I will consider them my friend. So, just so you guys know, that's friendly support to me. The other thing is, and I would like you to look this up, Eamon, but I've been here 30 years, and I don't remember ever getting a chance to vote on whether I pay the Port District tax or not.
Okay.
Did you, any of you recall, do you get to vote on whether you pay the Port District tax or not?
So have we got a consensus to take this to the next meeting or drop it right here? to bring it to.
That's really the question before the council. If you yes. move it to the next meeting, you vote to approve.
I will second the drop. I move on.
Drop it.
And it's
not
going to
go anywhere.
Does. Drop it? Anybody else like to see it go forward? Okay.
I would like to see it go forward, but you guys.
It don't look like we'll get the support to move it forward, so I guess we're going to drop it here and go on to the next item. Item 3, Catholic Charities tax request.
Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you. Good evening. Basically, the agenda memo that I gave you is pretty much a repeat of what I gave you at the last council meeting. There are a couple little nuances, and I'll talk about those. But just to recap, in 2003, the Othello Housing Associates entered into an agreement to voluntarily make contributions in lieu of taxes to the city. And that agreement was for the amount, a fixed amount of $35,000. And just to give you an idea, the project that they built has 26 units, and it averages 107 tenants. It was at full capacity after it was built, and it's been at 98 to 100% capacity ever since. So it stays pretty full. The turnover, the average stay is 22.1 months. Okay. And one of the things that they, of course, and I'll just cover this briefly. In 2009, first of all, the state of Washington has a law that if a family income level exceeds the 80% income limit after admission, the tax-exempt status is affected, even though the family still qualifies for occupancy. So the 80%, they have to be under the 80% level to qualify to be exempt. And then, so if any of their tenants go above that level, then things start to change. And at least 75% of the households have to be under the 80%, okay? And to maintain 100% exemption. And then, so in 2009, Desert Haven had 61% of its tenants under the 80% threshold. So the exemption was 61%, resulting in a property tax of $11,365.64. That's what this is all about. So Desert Haven had to start paying property taxes because they had people that were over the 80% threshold, roughly 39%. So the tax they're paying is basically 39% of 100% of property taxes. That's really what it comes down to. And the fact that they were paying that on top of the $3,500, they asked the city to forego the $3,500 because they're paying the property taxes. And of course, when I looked into that, I got to thinking about that, when in fact, only $2,500 or so of that money does come to the city. The rest of it is, well, it goes to the port, it goes to the hospital district, it goes to the library, it goes to all the other areas that get distribution on the property taxes. And so, my proposal I presented to council was that one of the proposals, anyway, was to pay the difference. So that was it was about $902 or something like that. And then if the threshold continues to change like it has, then pretty soon we would be getting the $3,500 in property taxes. My suggestion was to forego that. And that was only a suggestion, of course, because there are other options. One option is to do nothing. Continue to have them pay the $3,500 and then receive the property taxes on top of that. And the other option was their suggestion, or their request, initial request, was that we would just forego the $3,500, period, and they would pay property taxes. So there are other options besides the one that I had given. One thing, Council Member Doral had called and had a couple of questions, and I put them in the agenda memo on the last page. One of them she asked is, who paid to have 7th Avenue paid for this project? Well, the Catholic Charities paid for their portion of the road for their project. And this was, I believe, 7th Avenue. Well, the city wanted the entire width of the road, so the city paid to do the additional 12 feet, and it was a 471 feet in length. And I think Jay looked it up, and it was around $10,000 or $12,000. So the city invested $12,000 in the road. Catholic Charities did pay for their portion of the road. That was one of the questions. And then she also asked, what was the population of the development when it went in, and the population today? I think I just covered that earlier. It's been running close to 100%, which is 26 units and 107 tenants. Councilmember Doral called earlier today and asked about how many units that this represents. 61% is in the low income range, and 61% of 26 units is 16 units. So 16 of the units are in the low income range, and 10 are over the limit, over the 80% limit. That's how it stands at the end of 2009. I'd be happy to answer any further questions. Or
I would just like to say we're on a slippery slope here, because this housing associates has all the marbles, because if you read the contract, number 9 says we can terminate the agreement without a statement of cause, giving 90 days written notice to terminate. So if they don't like what we do, all they have to do is terminate this contract, and we get the whatever they pay in county taxes anyway. Right. So I don't know what to do here. You know, it's they got us.
Yeah, and that's one of my questions to Eamon today, was what was in their contract. And it, to me, to drop the 3,500, I don't think we should do that. I really like to give them credit for what they do contribute, because that is a fluctuating number. It could be from year to year. I would like to maintain that 3,500. I think that would keep them happy with what we currently have for the services we do provide them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was thinking too, with the turnover, what did I say, 22.1 months. If the thing changed so that they went above the 75% requirement to be fully exempt, and we gave away the $3,500, we would have nothing. We would basically have nothing. So I agree with the assessment that we could lose the $3,500 altogether, and if they become fully exempt again, we would have nothing coming in from them. So I think the idea is to kind of nurture that and say, hey, you know, we'll give you a credit on that and pay the difference.
Well, my initial reaction is, you know, they can pay that $3,500 plus taxes, because it so does not even come close to paying for the services they get between fire and police and roads and et cetera, et cetera. But maybe take a little softer stance with that clause in there. I would accept Mike's idea that we counter offer that if you would just pay us the difference between what percent comes back to us through county taxes and that $3,500, to make sure the city gets that $3,500. That would be my what I would initiate on a counter offer. That's how I'm feeling right now.
Would council like to see this back on the consent agenda for next week? That Mike's proposal?
Yes, I think Mike's, it's a compromise deal, and maybe we get something, you know, without getting stuck somewhere. So I think he's probably got a good idea. If we have to bring him back, why do so?
Okay, so we'll bring him back on the consent agenda for next week's council meeting.
For next Monday, okay.
I would like it as a separate motion, Ken, in case something comes up between now and then, if we get feedback or we learn more information or something.
Okay.
That's what I would prefer.
We'll have it on next Monday as a separate item.
Separate.
Thank you.
Okay. Number four, consideration of inspection services. Eamon.
Mike, can you make sure I do this computer right? Might need it tomorrow.
Yeah, give that to me.
I hope you don't, but just in case.
We're watching.
The issue before the council is, what is the most beneficial way for the city to provide plan review, which is a review of plans submitted, which has a fee and cost to it, building inspection services, which has a cost to it, and planning services to the city, and that involves working with the planning commission, making recommendations to the council, as well as putting together the city comprehensive plan. That's the basic charge of the planning commission. Last we talked, some suggestions were made about looking at percentages and comparing side by side what we currently have, which is a company called Safebuilt, versus the proposal on the table from Plan Center. I'm used to working with another company also. The side-by-side comparison, we have to start at a point that is not on this chart, and that's what Mark asked me before the meeting started. There's what's called the International Code Council that establishes a valuation table. This changes every 3 months, not every 4 months, but every 3 months. This is what Safebuilt currently bases their valuation on. So remember, there's this valuation table that's kind of a nebulous thing because it changes all the time. But I want to walk through a side-by-side comparison on what happens here. This is a permit fee comparison Safebuilt to the permit center. It's based on an example of a 2,000 square foot single-family residence, new construction. Based on the valuation table that is published, it comes out to $126 per square foot. So if you multiply that out, you get a $252,000 house. Now we go to our code book. Okay, remember, there's a valuation table that's established. Then there's a permit fee that's by our code book. The code book permit table in the OMC establishes what we charge. The plan review fee is 65% of the permit fee. And here's a permit fee, and this is based again on this house. So the total cost of a building permit by our code, that's directed by the valuation table, that's that moving target, is $3,445. Okay, that's going to be an important number, so remember that.
Can I, to be clear on that number, when somebody comes in with a building permit and wants to build a $252,000 house, the city charges them $3,445 for that?
By our current table, yes. Yeah, that's already approved in the OMC.
Okay.
We don't get a lot of these, but as you know, we're down around $140,000 area. But we just use a 2,000 square foot house. So here's what our OMC, the Othello Municipal Code, says we charge. So that's the permit fee that the Safebuilt contract percentage is based on. So our current contract says a plan review fee is 75% of this, and then the permit fee at 70% of the permit fee. So Safebuilt on this value house would charge $2,479. That's what we owe them. They invoice us for $2,479. So the city gets the difference between this and this. That's why you have to calculate it, Mark.
Philosophically, how does the city justify making $1,000 off that deal? What does the city do to earn that?
In what regard? In the plan, on the plan review side?
Well, it's getting reviewed and
the difference between that has $1,000.
So yeah. What, do we get involved somehow in inspecting it or establishing residency or?
I look at it as an admin fee because we hire somebody to do that. We hire somebody to do the plan review, the inspections on a daily basis. So that's all contracted, so that's the city's portion. And that's right out of the OMC again. The balance of what's left is that $1,000. So we okayed this line. Here's what we currently get invoiced for. So as Mark pointed out, the difference is about $1,000 the city gets.
So then, well, I'll take that up.
Do you want me to move that up in?
Well, no, let's leave it for just a minute, Mike. Thank you, though. I do want to, though. Let's balance that against what the permit center would charge. Now, it's very important that we know that they're using the same valuation table, okay, because we're going to change the scenario in a minute. This is the same valuation table that we started up here with Safeville. So this is apples to apples. The plan review fee at 60% versus 75 is 814, and 60% of the permit fee is 1252. So the total permit center fee is 2067 versus the 2479 with Safeville. That's the difference. Basically, it's 15% and 10%, depending on if it's a plan review or a plan fee. So the difference is right here, 70-75 and 60-60.
And that's the proposal to contract with the city to do this, 60%.
Yes, that's the current proposal on the table that came from our last meeting when we discussed this. The last meeting was a fixed rate. Now I'm going to change the scenario just a little bit. Now we need to move that along. Because that's not the total proposal. The percentage is right, but remember that nebulous valuation table that I was talking about? What the permit center is offering to do is that we adopt a valuation table, same thing Moses Lake has, okay? If we adopted the permit center using a proposed valuation table, same one Moses Lake uses, okay, what happens there is the valuation goes down to $92.40 per square foot. Remember up above we were at $126. This is important to a contractor. This is where they make their money. So $92 a square foot equals $184,000 house as opposed to the $252 up above. Remember, it all starts with that valuation table. That's why it's so important. So this is the proposal from the plan center on the percentage. So the plan review fee is $1,054, the permit fee is $1,622, total cost of the building permit. Remember, that's a permit out of the OMC. Now, what does the plan center, what are they going to charge the city to do the same job they did up here and the Safeville did? If you go through their 60% scenario, $632,973 plan review and permit fee for a total charge of $1,605 based on this percentage. Now you can see the dramatic difference between the $1,605, what the plan, the permit center is offering, and the $2,479 currently being invoiced by Safeville, or the $2,067 for the permit center, if they use the same valuation table. And what we're suggesting is that we adopt a new valuation table, the same as Moses Lake, to make it, I mean, builders that build there, build here. In fact, our primary builder also builds in Moses Lake. So this seems to be consistent and stabilizing costs for our developer. So the question is, I could go into a lot more detail on some of the numbers you have about the budget expense and what other cities pay for full-time employees, but I think I belabor the costs, so, or the exercise.
Can I ask you something here, Emma? One quick question here. When we're talking about the value there, we've got a value of $126 a square foot up here.
Right.
We're talking about $92 a square foot. The difference of the plan center versus safe built, when you get through with the same scenario, basically that house, you end up with the same amount of money comes back to the city, right?
Yes.
Yep.
It's good point. Thank you.
It's
yes.
$1,000 here one way
yeah.
or the other.
Absolutely.
Basically, we're getting the same amount of money for that particular permit with less value than what it would be
so,
valuation.
Excellent. Thank you. The question to the council is, what will benefit the city of Othello most relative to plan review and inspection services? Both companies have depth to them. They both have numerous inspectors. They both have numerous plan reviewers. One is out of state, one is in state. The permit center is in state. Safeville is out of Colorado. So we would like to suggest that, I would like to point out one other thing. And this is kind of a fun thing. At our last meeting, we only talked about a flat rate proposal from the plan center, or the permit center. I wanted to kind of show you what that meant. Because we have a large amount of school construction proposed this year, their engineer estimate is $19 million. It could be 22, it could be 17. We don't know, but that's their engineer estimate. Because of that number and that project, if you go down here to the bottom, the permit center flat fee proposal, their flat fee was $62,000. And new school construction would be zero because it's not a percent, it's a flat fee. So their flat fee for 2010, this year, would still be $62,000. So it's absolutely beneficial to the city to go flat rate in a very good year, which is this year, having high permit fees. It's not advantageous to the city in a low construction year. We may take in less revenue than we pay out. So that's the difference. The only other stabilizing factor for a flat fee is there's some predictability for our budgeting process. We can predict where we're going with a flat fee, but percentage, it doesn't matter because the percentage is paid out as money comes in, so that doesn't matter. What we're asking tonight is that you would send forward a proposal to be voted on at your next meeting with the permit center on a percent basis.
Well, do you know what Moses Lake basis for their valuation is versus the 126?
No, theirs would be at the wrong page. It would be at the 92.40. Per square foot.
Yeah, how do they arrive at that?
The reason why that is closer to what the expectation of a home builder here is, when a home builder comes to us in the city and says, I have a contract with this contractor to build my house for $80 a square foot, which is very common here, that's what we base the permit fee on. When they come, they have a contract, we can base it on that. So what I'm getting at here is that the $92 a square foot is more in line with what contractors in our locale are building houses for.
I know that, but how does Moses Lake determine that, and how will it, does it, do they vary it once a year, or?
I don't know that, Mark. I know they've had it for the current valuation table for 3 years. It's remained constant, but I don't know how far back.
So if somebody...
You approve that. So you change it when you want to change it. It's not a moving target. It only changes when you, the council, change it.
So if somebody does come in and has a contract with a contractor to build it for $80 a square foot, we still base the permit fee on the $92 a square foot?
Yes, and the reason is you have adopted that valuation table. Now you could put a stipulation in the contract that says exactly that. The contractor comes in with a signed contract for a lower amount, then that's what we base the fee on. You can establish that if you want.
Well, I, you know, that, you get your brother-in-law to build your house for $50 a square foot, so I don't know how that's fair.
That's why standardization table works better. Exactly.
Yeah. Because I know of a recent house that went in and they spent almost $225 a square foot on it.
Was it their brother-in-law?
But I'm really in favor for having one set fee, especially that could be posted on a website, a contractor that is trying to budget a home or build a home or bid something, he could go to that and figure out that set fee, what that permit's going to be, and include that in his budget. Also, I noticed on here, we have one contractor that builds a lot of what they call cookie cutter homes. Mm-hmm. Basically, there's four or five different plans that people pick when he does
all
that.
The same.
So there wouldn't be a plan review fee on all those permits, would
right.
there?
That's true.
So that additional money would come back towards the city.
To the city, yes, that's true. And is that, everybody understand what Ken said? Okay. Because we do have a major builder in town that builds the same house time after time after time, and why should he pay an additional plan review for each one of those? Once we reviewed the original plan, that fee would not be there.
And if we had another large contractor come in, that's basically what they'll probably do.
Right.
Anyway.
I'm just not clear what we're doing right now. If somebody comes in with a wants a permit to build a house, are we charging them, the city charging them the permit fee based on $126 or based on what the contractor says they'll build it for?
Well, there's two things. Remember that nebulous valuation table which drives the permit fee out of our code book. Okay, that's one way. What we try to establish with Safebuilt is that if a contractor comes in with a contracted price, you will honor that.
Mm.
And they did the first 18 months. They have not done that since. It's not in the contract that they have to do that, but when we have a contractor meeting with the inspectors every year, and we go through all the new code changes, and go through the fees, and every year we went through that exact thing. And if a contractor has a signed contract, if a homeowner does, that's what the fees are based on. And that worked for a year and a half. But it's not in our contract to say building no longer on that.
This come aware to me quite a while back when a contractor come to me and he was showing me his comparison of his permits, what he was spending last year for the exact same home that he was building this year. And they were almost 40% more of an increase in permit fees. And he says it's getting to the area that Ofella was higher than any other community around where he was building
That's
the
right.
homes for permit fees for the same amount of services that he was getting a year ago. And
so under this proposal though, that if they come in, we don't care what the contract price is or anything else, we base it on square footage times the $92. Is that what's gonna happen?
Right, you will see the table because you'll have to approve it for us to move forward. So you'll see the table with all the charges per square foot on it. You will adopt that, and that becomes what we use. Ken, you're right. The city used to have two strikes against it relative to building here. One was the fees that you just talked about, Ken. The other was that the city would issue a permit and then give a list of things to do by the contractor. And a week later, we give them another list that was longer. A week later, another list. We turned that corner, and we did that about 4 years ago. And now we have everything standardized relative to if you want to build this, here's your list. So you come in and get a checklist for anything you want to do, from a patio to a garage to a house. You get a permit or a list, and that's all you're required to do. It doesn't change. That's one reason why builders weren't building in Othello several years. But we solved that, and hopefully now we can solve the permit and the fee issue.
Is the downside, if we go with this $92 flat fee, if somebody comes up with an upscale house that cost them $130 a square foot to build, that we won't get that upcharge, we'll still charge them permit based on the $92 a square foot?
So again, you're doing a table. This is one example of the 92 or 96. There's a range, there's a table there that you will adopt, hopefully, that goes along with this. This is just one example, Mark. So no, that isn't a downside. It could be more, it could be less, depending on the table you adopt. But we're going to propose for this scenario of the 2,000 square foot house that it would result in that $92 square foot. That's the table that you're going to see for that house.
I guess I better see the table, because to me you're talking about a matrix where you're changing, one side is the square footage and one side is the value.
That's true. That's true. It's a little bit, there's a little bit of a spider web there.
So I don't understand how we're determining the value down here. If he comes in and says that it was only going to cost me $50 a square foot to build it, then...
We can handle that by contract. In the UBC, Uniform Building Code, it says in there, and there's a table in there also, that says that if the construction costs are severely out of whack of this table, which is one you're going to see, and I hopefully you're asking to bring back next week, that table will reflect the fee schedule that they pay. So let us bring back the fee table, and then we can use real life examples
here
and get you to a point that hopefully it makes more sense.
And just for full disclosure, is the permit center Daryl Percy and Associates?
Yes, and there's some debt to the company. It's not just Daryl Percy.
I said and Associates.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're approving the council to bring it back next week, and we'll go over it a little bit finer and make sure of all the nuances.
Yeah, to me, this front page is illustrative of win-win. It's less permit fee to the contractor, and it's the same amount of money to the city, net-net.
Yes.
So how can you lose with that?
On the consent agenda, then?
No.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'll see this back next week, hopefully, for passage.
Okay.
Next item. Five, we're actually going to delete from tonight's computer work. Weren't ready, but we'll see him back next week.
Yeah, if I can do just a brief introduction.
Okay.
To the mayor and I attended a Department of Health meeting on better communities. Part of that was they said, how about no smoking in the parks? The mayor kind of liked that. He said, find some ordinances of other cities doing that, give it to the council, see if the council wants to move forward. So he's not here tonight to talk from his perspective, but he did want me to clarify that he is thinking of all tobacco-related products, just not cigarettes and cigars, as some of the city cases. Some of these do say chewing tobacco and other things, so it's kind of in here, but he wanted me to make sure you all knew his desire is all tobacco-related products.
That's going to be tough.
Well, as I said, in the
and
memo,
getting tougher because
staff has not evaluated this. How do we enforce it?
Yeah, that's
a big question.
Anybody else see the interview I saw last night? This guy is he has what they call it. It comes out of Sweden. It's called snus, SNUS or something like that. And it comes in a little very thin packet. You slip it up underneath it, and you can't even tell he's got it. He did this interview with this lady. And he had one in his mouth all the time.
Huh.
And you never spit. So how are you going to force something like that? You're going to stop him at the front of the park and say, okay, empty your pockets. You know, if you have a gun or do you have drugs or do you have, you know, these little things, you got to throw them away.
I agree. Enforcement would be a huge issue.
Yeah, enforcement's going to be a hairy.
And another example somebody brought up today was there's a 25-foot distance here between different individuals. And say you're sitting there and somebody comes up. Wasn't that you saying that today?
No,
yeah.
Wasn't me.
Then does that first person have to move, or was that you, Ken? Yeah. So there's all kinds of questions relative to that.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And the 25-foot thing doesn't work now. And
at businesses,
you'd go down to Pasco or Kennewick or someplace down there, and these guys are standing right outside the door smoking. The 25-foot, nobody pays any attention to it anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
You want to move forward and further discuss it or kill it tonight?
I think we're in an open space area. I don't think we're over populated, and I don't think it's an issue.
I think it would be an enforcement nightmare, really, really hard. It'd be spending the police departments most of their time trying to chase them around like on the 4th of July chasing fireworks.
Well, just be careful, folks. Just because something is hard to enforce doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. There's a lot of things that are hard to enforce, but, I mean, even fireworks is a good example. It's still on the books. We don't just throw our hands up in the air because it's hard to enforce. It's the intent.
I could see it being more enforceable at community events such as the baseball, when you've got a big crowd and somebody could walk through there and enforce that kind of thing. But in just the open air park, I can see it being a nightmare to enforce.
I was down at the automobile thing down here a year or so ago, and somebody was sitting down there, and they had some beer in the park. Mm. Well, somebody turned them in. First thing you know, here comes the cop. He came down there and said, "You got beer? Yep. Get it out of here right now." He didn't write him a ticket or anything like that. He said, "Just, it's not allowed in the park. Take it to your car. Get it out of here, whatever." But, you know, if somebody complains, why then, you've got it down, I guess it's like Mark said, you know, it's not that hard to enforce, but I don't know. Having been a past smoker, I guess they, you know, I can understand people saying, I don't want me to do anything, but at the same time, now we're getting third-hand smoke instead of second. So,
I think maybe it'd be good. Like what your blue laws did, just there, but how do you enforce it?
Maybe it's only fair to let the mayor make you have his statement.
I don't care about the. To me, we just have bigger fish to fry than that one.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a big issue in town.
Okay, the mayor brought this up for discussion. We want to see it back next week. He can make his case on it.
I don't mind discussing it.
Okay, he can cut it off. Bring it up under new business. Or old business.
Okay. Then it would be old business.
We'll go on to well number 5 update.
Good evening again. On March 12th, well number 5 suffered a failure. All we know at this point in time right now is that the column approximately 120 feet down from the surface came apart. We called in a well driller, Schneider Equipment, and they started pulling it up, and that's when they found we had 120 feet of column and pipe that would actually come out. The rest of it went down the hole. We figure in the neighborhood of about 30,000 pounds dropped down the rest of the hole. We took a camera in, or Schneider Equipment took a camera in to video and see just exactly what we could find. They found the top of the column of what's left in the hole and determined that they could hook onto this and pull it out. They made that attempt Friday and today, and I was hoping I could bring you more news, but I can't. They got hooked onto it and blew a coupler on their hydraulic pump, and the crane truck stood up in the air. So they're coming back tomorrow with repair parts, or today and tomorrow with repair parts and some better outriggers to attempt to pull this out again. What we do know of damages is that the 350-horse motor, the frame on it, is broke. This motor has been repaired in the past twice that we know of, rewound, and it's probably not the best case scenario for a motor to put back on it. We're starting to look at a couple of different things right now, one being a little bit bigger motor. And once we get the rest of this out of the ground, we're going to make a determination with Gray and Osborne, the well driller, and the city staff to see why this come apart. Did the coupling break? Did it come unscrewed? We don't know yet until we get this out of the ground and can actually make that determination and what the best fix will be. Hopefully tomorrow I'll have a little more information on can we actually get it up and out of the hole and what damage is down the hole right now.
Who put it in last?
Excuse me?
Who put it in last?
It would have been a local company.
So in you gave us how many pounds dropped, how many feet dropped, 120 feet, how?
From the point from the bottom of the bowls and the screen and the pipe, approximately 300 feet, 200 to 300 feet is what actually the distance 30,000 pounds fell. So we don't know. We could not videotape beyond the top of that column what was in the hole.
Well, what was, there's the whole shaft, 120 feet you pulled out. How much of the shaft is there 100, still 100 feet down there now?
Or? There was I believe 200.
200 feet.
I believe. I don't have that exact number.
How deep is that well, Jay?
Well, three originally. I guess I can't give you that number because I'm thinking of all eight of them at the same time. But I can't give you that number right now.
What I'm asking, in case we can't get that out of there, is it going to interfere with dropping a new one in there?
Yes.
To
be honest, yes.
You know, we've got 600-700 feet deep, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
whatever, and how deep do we pump out of it makes a difference of what we've got in there.
What we're thinking is that hole, and I don't have the exact footages, but I'll get them, has a lot of sediment in the bottom of it, and what we're thinking is, and this is just what we're thinking, we don't know this for sure yet until we get it out, is that bowl and screens dropped into that sediment and is basically suctioned in.
Okay.
We get the pump truck or the pump on the crane truck fixed tomorrow. They're already hooked onto it, and we tried pulling, but it just wasn't enough before it blew that coupling on the pump. Get that fixed, and we'll try to get it pulling up and we can evaluate from there. Until then, I can't say. But once it is all out, we will be looking at why, what happened, and what's going on. Just for information, it does have 15,000 hours on it right now, and it went 3 years. Well, we're looking at a pattern right now of 18,000 hours, right around 4 years. And we're going to see if we can't figure out a way to stretch that out a little more. Wells 3 and 5 are our two primary biggest pumping holes in the city.
But then when they pulled out the 120 feet, the last section, there's no sign of breakage. It's just the nothing screwed
just,
onto
just
it.
Just nothing there. There's nothing screwed onto it. But that doesn't say that the coupler busted loose and came off of it, or if it came, we don't know yet until we get it out of the hole exactly what happened.
Is this something that we should be getting our insurance company in on?
Yes.
Right now?
Yeah, the last two we were successful in retrieving monies from our insurance authority.
And there will be a report when it comes out of the ground that we can send to the insurance company.
That's if you could get it out of the ground. Hopefully.
When, yes. When? I like to say when.
Might have you skinny down there and cut that, you know, leave the rest of it down the sediment.
I think there's a few smaller guys in Public Works that might be a little more suited for that. Got one in mind.
Any more questions for Jay or Zipper? Okay, we'll go to committee reports. Anybody got any committee reports? I know you got something, Kim.
Which one? No, not really. We've got Centennial, and I think you've got a little notation there that will pretty well take care of that portion of it. I think we're all on board pretty much with our Centennial project and whatnot. We've been working with Public Works and the Police Department. I've got a little more to finish up with the Fire Department, and thanks to the council, they give us a okay to do what we want with the parks, and we're having weekly meetings now to try to get all the pieces put together and basically where we're at. Might give you a quick rundown on this booklet I gave you here the other day, and I think all of you got this. Has to do with the Coulee Corridor and the Okanagan Trails, and of course Grant County is still involved, but they put a lot of money into that, so I guess we're going to have to put up with their seal on the bottom. But there is a lot of good information in it, and I think this is probably the best book that's ever been put out for Harry Hayter's concerned, and it's a good project. I was up to the Indian Reservation last Friday. They had a dedication of a rest area up there. The reason Barb and I were there as part of the Cooley Corridor. It's on the Cooley Corridor. It's a turnout. And the Colville tribes, they made kind of this dedication for the rest area of Chief Joseph. And it's kind of ties in with our history and whatnot of the Cooley Corridor. There was three of us there from the Cooley Corridor itself represented it. Wasn't the officers, but it was us that was there. Paul Mayer was there. He helped dedicate it as far as the WorSDOT's concerned. And it's a nice thing that I think they did. So that's about it, I think, as far as committees, and you can give that little announcement a little later.
Okay. On that, Ken, I really want to compliment the staff and stuff on our sidewalk out front. That looks just absolutely wonderful. That really looks good. And I'm finding out there's a lot of people out there that still want a brick. And I really encourage the Centennial Committee to look at a second phase of that, because I think it would still go over really well for this year.
We're looking at that. Like you said, we've had a lot of comment about it. And thanks to Public Works jumping in there and getting that project done. It happened at the Sand Hill Crane Festival, so it was a kind of a show-off. And we have had a lot of comment about extra bricks and whatnot. And I don't know whether Debbie and all of us are up to trying that again or not, but we'll see how it works when we get a little further down the road here.
Any other committee reports? Unfinished business? Any new business?
Jay, I noticed a soccer field in Lions Park was shut down. Is there something happening there, or is it just getting wore down?
It's getting wore down. I didn't hear that.
Oh, the soccer field in Lions Park is shut down.
Yes.
Why?
We should be opening it up due to just soggy conditions right now.
Okay. I just have people ask me, so I just wanted to know what
to
tell them. Okay. Thank you.
I had one thing under new business, and I noticed we had a little memo that the yellow lights were extended on a few of the street lights here in town. And I know one of the intersections was one of the problem down there in the corner of Broadway and Main.
Broadway and Main, yes.
To me, I think that'll be a mistake in the long run, because at one time a yellow light meant to slow down. It's going to get ready to turn red. Now everybody takes it as speed up. Let's get through it quick. And by extending that time, you just gave them more time to speed up a little bit faster to go through it. And I seen it as a result this weekend and almost got hit.
Really?
At an intersection because of it.
We can change it back, but the six is more, it's closer to the state standard now. For some reason,
I know we do have a problem with Broadway Street, because we got a 35, a 25, then a 35 again, and there is a lot of heavy truck traffic through there, and they do fly down through that street.
Yeah, they do.
And you can hear the tires squealing all the time when they're coming up to that light. But I think it's something that you really want to watch and see what that does. Is there any more new business? Okay, Mayor's announcements. This Friday, April 9th, there will be a centennial flag raising and ribbon cutting for the Centennial Brick Project at 5 p.m. here at City Hall. And also this Friday, April 9th at 5:30, Doc Hastings, Representative Doc Hastings, will conduct a town hall meeting here in the council chambers. So I encourage you to show up for that. Thursday, April 8th, ACDC meeting here, also in the council chambers next week. Next week, Mayor's Luncheon, Wednesday, April 14th at noon at the Senior Center. Everybody's welcome to attend that. Tuesday, April 13th, is the annual City Fire District meeting at 7 p.m. Councilmember Spohr, Garcia, and Snyder are all on that. Poll committee meeting Thursday, April 8th, this Thursday, at noon, here at City Hall. Doral, Spohr, and myself on that. And also a reminder to the council members that haven't filed their public disclosure, April 15th is soon arriving. We need to do that online or send it in. With nothing else, the meeting's adjourned.